Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Chof Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins the second line from the top of Daf Chof Hey. The Gemara opens with an incident that involves the Sabi de Nizunya. Nizunya is the name of the place. Sabi are the elders, the wise men of Nizunya. So it says, Sabi de Nizunya lo asu lepirkei de Rav Chisda. They did not show up at the lecture given by Rav Chisda. Omar le the Rav Hamnuna. Rav Chisda was upset, and he turned to Rav Hamnuna and said to him, Zil san inhu. San inhu is an expression meaning excommunication. In other words, punish them, excommunicate them for not showing up. Also, Omar lehu. Rav Hamnuna went to them and said to them, "My time alo asu rabbanan lefirka. Why is it that you don't attend Rav Chisda's lecture?" Omru le, they responded and said, "Am I nasi? Why should we come? Deboinon minay milsavalo pashalon. We ask of him questions and he doesn't answer us." Omar lehu, "Mi bo isu minoi midi velo pashitno lehu? Did you ever ask anything of me and I not respond? I not answer?" So they accepted Rav Hamnuna's offer, bo'u minei. They asked of him the following. Eved shesorsoi rabo babetzim mahu. Before we translate the Gemara, let us simply point out that in the end of our last shiur, we were discussing the issue of a master who knocks out one of the limbs, one of the visible limbs of his servant. We derive from the verse that deals with the master knocking out his Evan Kednanis, his heathen servant's tooth or eye, Shane Vayan, the servant goes free. We also learned that the idea of Roshe Evorim includes more than just eye and tooth, but there's reference made to 24 other Roshe Evorim. The Sabi de Nizunya are asking, what is the status of a male's Beitzim? Beitzim are the testicles that are, of course, on the male human anatomy that are contained within a skin sack known as the scrotum. And here we're referring to a master that shesarso is a term. It actually has a certain, we'll say, general connotation. It means he's sterilized by impact upon the male's beitzim. In this case, his slave's beitzim. He caused through impact. He caused damage and sterility. But we're functioning not so much on the reproductive aspect of things, but the visual appearance of mutilation. So the Eved, the slave, shesorsoi rabo babetzim, that mutilated his slave's testicles, mahu. Kemum shebegolui domi oiloi. Does it have the status of an external mum, an external blemish, and that would be grounds for his going free or not? The issue, the doubt, is concerns their nature, namely, the beitzim, the testicles themselves, are suspended in a regular male, are suspended in the sack, and they're visible from outside in the fact that they are suspended. They will say they hang downwards. On the other hand, the beitzim themselves are contained within the scrotum, so that you don't actually see the beitzim. You are aware of their presence because of the nature their nature, that they're tluyim, they're suspended. This was the question that the Sabbath in Zunya posed to Rav Hamnuna. Lo have biyodei, he had no answer. Omru lo mashimcha, they asked him, well, what's your name? Omar lu Hamnuna. Omru le lav Hamnuna, your name isn't to be Hamnuna, elo karnuna. There are two explanations to this. One is the explanation you find in Rashi, karnuna from word karen. Karen means a corner, or if you would like, you'd say those that sit in corners. It's a reference to people that are unoccupied and they're ignoramuses. We might refer to them as people that sit on stoops. So they were insulting Rav Hamnuna by calling him Karnuna. The Rabbeinu Hananel explains that the name Hamnuna can be viewed as made of two words. The he can interchange with a ches. So it would be ham, as warm or hot. Nuna. Nuna is a fish. So they were saying to him, you're not a hot fish or a warm fish. You're a kar nuna, kar, a cold fish. Let's continue in the Gemara. Also, lekamei de Rav Chista. Rav Hamnuna, after his unpleasant encounter with the Sabi de Nezunya, he reported to Rav Chista what had happened. Omarle, Rav Chista told him, Masnisa ba'u minoch. The question that they asked of you is found, the answer is found in a Tanaic source. Structurally, take note of we have a long point marking. The response of Rav Chista essentially lasts till the second wide line. Procedurally, what Rav Chista does is he cites a Mishnah from Maseches Negoyim. The issue deals with skin discoloration that results in saras, making a person tame. There are places on the body that if there is skin discoloration, the Kohen cannot issue a ruling. And since the Kohen is incapable of issuing a ruling because he cannot see the entire limb at one glance, it therefore resists the individual with those limbs, will say, resist absorbing halachic tzaras. He does not become tomei. Then, at the end of the Mishnah quote, you will notice the second to last line of Gemara, Vitoni Allah. In this case, that's a brisa, another form, it's a later form of Tanaic literature. A brisa is added, and it says, regarding all of the limbs mentioned in the context of Negoyim, Bekulon Eved Yoitzman Lecheris. You might see this dashed underline on the last narrow line of Gemara. So at that point, a brisa is cited, connecting the topic of Negoyim and the limbs that are going to resist being affected, and connected to our topic of slaves going free because of masters mutilating them. And then we will eventually get to the point concerning the Sirus has to do with that mutilation of the Beitzim, and discover that the issue is a Tanaic controversy. So what Rav Chista is saying, he says, Masnisa Bominoch. Masnisa is a reference to a Brisa. And the answer to the question they posed to Rav Hamnuna is in the Brisa quote that follows the Mishnah cited from Negoyim. So now we continue in the Gemara. Rav Chista, having said Masnisa Bo Minoch, they asked of you a question whose answer is found in the Brisa. Disnan. We open with a quote from the Mishnah in Negoyim. Esrim Varbo Roshei Evarim Shibadam. There are 24 heads or tips of limbs. Kulon Ein Mitamin. All of them resist Tuma, the Tuma of Tzoras. Mishum Michya. Michya is a form of Tzoras. So they're Ein Mitamin Mishum Michya. They resist the Michya form of Tuma. The Eluhain. The following is the list. The Elohim Roshei, the Elohim, they are as follows: Roshei Etzbois Yodayim Veraglayim, the tips of the fingers of the person's hands and feet. That accounts for 20. The 10 fingers on the hands, 10 toes on the feet. And we're talking about the if the michya would appear on the tips of these appendages, the being that they are rounded in shape, the Kohen, by one glance upon them, doesn't see all the sides. And that is the reason that they resist the halachic tumah ruling. Other limbs, where we need to find four more, the roshei oznayim, the edges of the ears, the rosh achotem, the tip of one's nose, the rosh hagvia, and the tip of the male organ of reproduction. The roshei dodim shevisha, we noted this in a parenthesis because this is unique to a female, the tips of the breasts of a woman. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af shebeish, Rabbi Yehuda includes the male breasts or chest equivalent by a male. V'toni Allah, regarding the list of limbs, bekulam eved yotze bohen l'cherus. With regard to a master that mutilates any of those, on his eved kanani, the eved kanani, the heathen slave, will go free. Rabbi Omer, af hasirus. Sirus is the topic that we have waited to see. So too the sirus. The sirus is the issue of the mutilation of the testicles. Ben Azai Omer af haloshon. Ben Azai adds the tongue. Af haloshon. Rashi says across from here, af haloshon shedako leiraos kshu medaber umum shebegolui hu. When one is speaking, you can see the tongue. Therefore, it fits into the list of blemishes that are considered external blemishes, which are the basis, the reason for the Eved, the heathen slave, going free. So we have reference made to Sirus, and you see that it's a machlokes tanoim. The Gemara goes on, though, to clarify. Rav Chisda continues speaking. Omar Mar. Rav Chisda quotes the source. Rabbi Oimer Av HaSirus. So too, sterilization. Sirus Demai. What organ was sterilized? Ilema Sirus Degid. If it's a reference to the male organ, the penis, well, Hainu Gvia. That's what Gvia means. And that was already mentioned in the source. You'll notice we have a small arrow to the side of the Gemara text. You can just align that with the arrow above, and you see the line in which that organ was already mentioned. Emolav Sirus debates him. It has to do with mutilization, the mutilation of the testicles, which is also a reason for sterility. So the point now is that the question concerning an Eved, Shesor Sarabu Bebeitzim, the answer would be, this is a Machlokes Tanoyim. According to Rebbe, it is grounds for freedom. According to the Tanakama, the earlier rabbinic source, the first rabbinic source, they are not. Rebbe Omer, Af Hasirus. Here we're focusing on the source. And we quote here, Rebbe says, Af Hasirus. From the source, it would appear that as far as the tongue is concerned, only Ben Azai acknowledges the tongue as the basis of freedom of a slave. Rebbe doesn't seem to acknowledge it. So the Gemara asks, and you'll notice we have a new marking, a volcano shape, on the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei/Mivne heading. This shape appears in alternating directions. This is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the back and forth style Gemara. With the narrow part of this trapezoid facing upwards, she'elos, that represents questions, the inverted positioning, tshuvos. Levarer Shitas Rebbe Bahagdoras Haloshon Ke'ever Goli. We want to clarify Rebbe's position regarding the tongue. At first glance, it would appear that Rebbe does not view the tongue as an aver shebegolui, an external appendage or external limb which would warrant the freeing of a slave if the master would mutilate it. The Gemara asks, for Rebbe, loshon lo, and as far as Rebbe is concerned, the tongue is not a mum shebegolui, an external limb. V'raminhu, we raise a question on this from a Tanaic source that deals with an individual that needs to have sprinkled upon him the ash water mixture of the poradum, of the red heifer ash water mixture, which is metahir, someone which helps, it's part of the purification process of someone who was tomei mace, who was defiled to the dead. It is assumed, or it is a given, that the sprinkling must land on an external part of the client's body. So the source says, Hare mi shoya maze v'nitzo hazo apiv. There was someone who was sprinkling, and the sprinkling landed on his piv. Rebbe Omer Hizah. Piv has to do with mouth. The term mouth is actually a somewhat general expression. When I say general, you have to consider a mouth includes lips, tongue, teeth, the gums. So it says here that the maz, the hazah, landed on piv, on the mouth of the person that needed the hazah, that needed the sprinkling. Rebbe Omer Hizah. Rebbe says it's mission accomplished. V'chacham Omer Lo Hizah. No, it's not sufficient. My lav alishono. Is it not so that we're talking about the hazoya, the water ash mixture landing on the tongue? And if that is to be accepted, then Rebbe says that since he says it's an acceptable hazah, Rebbe is acknowledging that the tongue is an external limb. And then if a master mutilated his slave's tongue, that would warrant his going free. Lo, al svasov. The reference made to mouth is ash water mixture landed on his lips. And that's external. Well, al svasov shita, do I need a Tanaic source to tell me the obvious? It's not so obvious. It is lips. Ma'u detemo zimna decholim sose. Sometimes people clench their lips in such a way they make their lips tight, and you don't really see the lips. And therefore, maybe it should not be viewed as an external limb. Komash malon, the source, by saying the sprinkling landed on lips constitutes a successful sprinkling, shows us that the lips, even though at times one tightens them or clenches them, they're nevertheless considered external. Question. V'hotanyo al lishono. Here we have a Tanaic source regarding sprinkling, and it says on the tongue. It's effective. The Ode Tanya. We have another source that deals with blemishes concerning a firstborn animal. And blemishes that render a firstborn animal a balmum, a blemished animal, and hence disqualified as being offered as a sacrifice, it would have to be a type of blemish that's of an external, visible nature. Concerning the topic of bechor blemishes, it says, v'shenital, there has been removed, roiv haloshen, the majority of the tongue. Rebbe Omer Rov Hamidaber Shebelishono. That's the majority of the tongue that's free, that's not attached to the mouth cavity. What is important for us to notice here is that we're dealing with the tongue, and we're viewing it, we're treating it as an external appendage. And that's Rebbe's opinion. We see Rebbe as being part of these proofs, so Rebbe in the original source, which appeared at the last of the narrow lines, beginning of the first wide lines of the Gemara, Rebbe who said, Afasirsa didn't make any mention of tongue, only Ben Hazai made mention of tongue as an external organ, that seems to be doing us a disservice. Elo, the Gemara answers, Rebbe, Omer, Sirus, Velomi Bayaloshon. In fact, our conclusion is to be accepted that Rebbe does acknowledge the tongue. Why does he not mention it? Because what Rebbe is saying is, in the source, he's saying the testicle mutilation is a blemish, and it doesn't need to be told. It goes without saying the tongue. As far as Rebbe is concerned, the tongue doesn't need to be specified because it's so obvious. It's at times it's actually visible literally. The testicles are they're contained within the scrotum, so that needs to be taught as qualifying nevertheless as an external limb. The tongue, that doesn't need to be taught. So Rebbe didn't mention it. Ben Azai Omar Lashon. Ben Azai says, the Lashon, that's an external limb. Aval Sirus, lo. But the mutilation of the testicles, as far as Ben Azai is concerned, is not external, would not be grounds for a slave going free if mutilated by the master. Umay Af, if Ben Azai is saying Af, Halashon, the word Af means and the tongue as well. Well, as well, in addition to what? Right before Ben Azai, Sirus was mentioned, and now you're telling me that Ben Azai disagrees regarding Sirus. So what's Ben Azai saying when he says, Af, even the tongue? What's he adding it to? So the Gemara says, A komaisa. It's referring to the previous list. Rashi, on the first wide line under the Gemara text says, Akomaisa koi. Estrim varbo haminuyin eitzon egoyim, dekomertan ekam evit yoitzibohem lecherus. Regarding the 24 limbs that appeared in the context of the negoyim of the michyah, the skin discoloration topic, and the Tanakama of the Brisa said that those 24 limbs have relevance regarding the freeing of a slave. So Moisif Ben Azai Leinyan Eved Af Haloshon. In addition to those 24, Ben Azai says the tongue as well. So the Gemara asks, well, then structurally, Ihochi Nekadmo de Ben Azai Bereisha. Ben Azai should have appeared before Rebbe. Ben Azai doesn't make any acknowledgement of Sirus, so you would have had the Tanakhama saying the 24 limbs mentioned by Negoyim Eved Yoytze Ben Yodeh Lechirus, and then Ben Azai should appear and say, Af Haloshon, the tongue as well. He says, technically speaking, you're right. However, there's a reason Ben Azai appears where he does. Tana Shoma L'derebi V'kova. The Tana, and at the time that these Tanaic sources were presented, they were presented in an oral fashion. So he the Tana, the presenter of the Tanaic source, learned Rebbe. He didn't learn Ben Azai. He learned Rebbe. In other words, you had the basic list of 24, Tanakama with his connection to the Eved, and then Rebbe. So as far as the initial study of the source, Rebbe was learned initially, v'kava, and he memorized it. Then later on, v'shamal Ben Azai, and then he heard Ben Azai's position, v'tani, and learned that. U'mishne lo yizoza mimekoyma, the original way he learned it orally, learned it by heart, remained as it was. In other words, first Rebbe was what he learned orally, learned it by heart, and then Ben Azai. Technically, the order of the names and their positions should be reversed, but since he learned it by heart, it's very difficult to learn anew by heart in a changed fashion from the way you originally learned it. Omar Ula, Hakol Moidim Baloshan, Le'inyin Tuma. Ula is making reference to the Tanaic source that we had above. You'll notice we have a little squiggled arrow to the immediate side of the Gemara text. This is designed to connect the reference Ula is making to the source that he is referring to. Ula is referring to he says, Hakol Modim, all agree. All agree is a veiled reference to a controversy that had been presented, and the participants in that controversy on this point agree. They all agree. So they all agree. They is a pronoun referring to Rebbe and the Chachamim. We saw Rebbe and the Chachamim in a source above arguing concerning the sprinkling of the Pora Aduma, the ash water mixture, for purification from Tumas Mace. That is referred to as Hazah, sprinkling. We have diamonds, and on the side of the Gemara, you'll notice under the Nosei/Mivneh heading, Gimel Tchumim, three halachic areas, Sheyesh Tzorech Lahagdir Haloshen, where there's need for classifying or categorizing the tongue, Ke'ever Pnimi Ochitzoni, is it an internal limb or an external limb? There are three different areas of halacha where external versus internal is a consideration. The dash underline that you see highlights the expressions Hakol Moidim, everyone agrees, versus Lo Nechliku Ela, they disagree only on this. So if you scan ahead in the markings, you'll notice that the Hakol Modim expression introduces two of the diamonds. That means in two of the three topics, there is no disagreement. The first diamond highlights the Inyan Tuma. That has to do with physical contact with a source of Tuma. A dead sheretz, a dead crawling creature, will communicate Tuma if it touches an external part of a person's body. That's to the exclusion of something called a base hastorim, and a hidden, covered-up part of the body. The Ula reveals that the tongue, even though sometimes it's not visible, is nevertheless not categorized as base hastorim, a concealed limb. So Ula says, Omar Ula, Hakol Moidim, Rebbe and the Chomim agree, Baloshin, regarding the tongue, Linyin Tuma, regarding absorption of defilement, the Golui, who Eitzel Hasheretz, it's considered external or exposed regarding contact with a Sheretz. My Taima, why is that so? The answer is, the Pasuk says, Asher Yiga Bo. There is a Pasuk quoted on the side of our Gemara that we've written in, Vayikra Perek Tesva Pasuk Yud Aleph. It says, V'chol Asher Yiga Bo Hazav V'yodav Lo Shotav B'mayim V'chibes B'god V'rochas B'mayim V'tomei Ad Orev. The Pasuk itself has to do with Hazav, but the Gemara connects that Asher Yiga Bo Omar Rachmona. The Torah says that V'hai Nami, the tongue as well, Bar Negiyahu, it is capable of being touched. So since it's being capable of being touched, that's enough to classify it as an organ or as a limb capable of absorbing tuma. The next topic is tevila, immersion in a mikveh. Le'inyan tevila, and the tongue, regarding immersion in the mikveh in the tongue, ketomun domi. It's considered concealed or hidden, which means that when one immerses himself in a mikveh, there's no need for the mikveh water to enter your mouth. There is need for the mikveh to cover your entire body, but as we said, you can keep your mouth closed when you submerge yourself in the rituarium, in the mikveh pool. My taima, verochatz Besaro Bamayim. Omar Rahmana, the pasuk referring to immersion says that Ma Besaro Mevro, just like flesh which needs to have contact with the water is external, Afkol Mevroi, so too water has to have contact with anything else that's external, and no need for tongue to encounter the mikveh water. I know that these things sound somewhat arbitrary. The Gemara will feature, psukim that touch on these topics. But for our purposes, the citations of Asher Yiga Bo in the case of Tuma should be, let's say, sufficient for us right now. Appreciating the capability of touching is enough for Tuma absorption. As far as immersion in a mikveh, that's not the standard, but rather, it's rather a standard of constancy, like flesh, like skin. Skin is always, not just a function of a potential for, but it's always exposed. So too, only that which is always exposed needs contact with the mikveh water. So those two topics, and how to classify the tongue, are not the subject of any disagreement. Lo nechleku elo le'inyan hazah. There, machlokes appears with regard to hazah, the sprinkling of the pora duma water. Rebbe medame lo letuma. Rebbe compares the tongue to the topic of tuma, and the topic of tuma, the tongue, was golui, external, and therefore the tongue would receive the hazah. It would be an effective hazah, as Rebbe said in the source above. For Rabbonan, medami lo letvila, the Rabbonan compare the tongue in the context of hazah to tvila. It's not exposed, and therefore, as far as hazah is concerned, which needs to land on an exposed part of the body, hazah landing on tongue, according to the Rabbonan, is not sufficient. The Travayu Bahai Kral Kamifli, both of them, Rebbe and the Chachamim, argue concerning the same pasuk, the following pasuk. The pasuk that's quoted is by Midbar Perek Yutes, pasuk Yutes. We've quoted the pasuk on the side of the Gemara. So let's read the pasuk before we go into the Gemara text. It says there, V'hizo ha-Torah la-Tomei, b'yom ha-Shlishi, u'v'yom ha-Shvi'i, v'chit'o, b'yom ha-Shvi'i, v'chibes b'godo, v'rochatz b'mayim, v'toher b'orev. That's the entire pasuk. When we look at the Gemara, you will see Rebbe citing the first half of the pasuk, and the Chachamim then citing the second half of the pasuk. Take careful note that the end of Rebbe's pasuk quote, the last word in his quote, is the same word that constitutes the beginning of the Rabbonan's quote of the second part of the same pasuk. The Gemara, Rebbe Sofar. Let me just back up one line in the middle. We said that both of them, but the Travayu Bahai Kral Kamifli Vizo HaTorah LaTomei V'chule. That was the pasuk that we read already. Rebbe Sofar Vizo HaTohor Al HaTomei Bayoim HaShlishi Uvayoim HaShvi'i V'chit'o. In this pasuk, we have reference to tomei. That's the sprinkling is done on the client that needs to be purified. So right now he's tomei. So that al hatomei is a reference to tuma, a place that one can absorb tuma, and v'chito. That's a reference to the hazo'a. So what do you see? You see that hazah must land on a part of the person that could absorb tuma. The tongue, well, everyone agreed that the tongue is a part of the body that could absorb defilement. So that hazah landing on tongue is a qualified, successful hazah. Rabbonan Savri, v'chito b'yom hashvi'i v'chibes b'godo v'rochatz b'mayim. This is the continuation of the same pasuk. The Rabbonan start their quote with Vechito, once again, a reference to Hazah, and it's compared to Verochatz Bamayim. These are the terms that we've dashed underline. Verochatz Bamayim is a reference to the mikveh, immersion in a rituarium. So that Hazah, as far as the Rabbonin are concerned, are compared to the rules of immersion. Where does the tongue stand with regard to immersion? It's considered internal. As far as immersion is concerned, there's no need for mikveh water to reach that. However, that's by virtue of the fact that the tongue is internal. Ah, when it comes to Hazah must land on a part of the body that's external. The Gemara continues, V'rabbonon nami nedamye lituma. Why don't the Rabbonon adopt the approach Rebbe took and compare the rule of Hazah to the rule of Tuma and consider the tongue exposed? The Rabbonon answer, Tahara mitara have le lemelav. They Rabbonon prefer to compare the, we'll say, resembling or like topics. Hazah is a means of achieving purification. The mikveh is a means of achieving purification. So those topics should be compared to one another. And hence the Rabbanan said that Hazah is dependent on the rules of Tevilah. And just like in Tevilah, the tongue is considered internal, regarding Hazah, the tongue will be considered internal and unqualified for Hazah. V'Rebbe Nedamye L'Tevilah. Why doesn't Rebbe follow the approach taken by the Rabbanan, where the Rabbanan compared Vechito, Hazah, to Verochatz Bamayim, which is Tevilah? Rebbe says, I can't do it because Vechibes Begodav Hifsika Inyan. You notice in the line just before, we had dot underline that, to highlight that phrase interrupts between the Hazah reference to the mikveh reference, and that interruption prevents Rebbe from making that comparison. Question: the Sova Rebbe l'nitvila ketamun domi. Now we have a little arrow to the left hand side of the Gemara text. You can align this with the line above, and at that point the Gemara said that regarding tvila, everyone agrees the tongue is like tamun, and there's no need for water to get into your mouth regarding tevila, immersion in the mikveh. Is that really so? V'omar Ravin, omar Rav Ado, omar Rebbe Yitzchok. Maisa b'shivcho shel beis Rebbe. An incident happened concerning the bondmaid in the house of Rebbe, and it's significant that we're mentioning Rebbe. Shetovla v'also. This bondmaid immersed in a mikveh emerged from it, v'nimsa etzem bein shinah, and found a little piece of bone stuck between her teeth. V'tzricha Rebbe tefila acheres, and Rebbe himself says you've got to immerse again. The foreign substance stuck between your teeth constitutes an interposition, a chatzitza, and the mikveh water must reach all parts of the body without encountering a chatzitza. Now where was this? It was in her mouth. Before we said mikveh water doesn't have to get into the mouth, and here it seems that it does. The Gemara answers, there's the difference between actual requirement and the need for potential. Nehi de bias mayim lo bo inon. True. In actuality, when a person is free of any interpositions, he doesn't need, or she doesn't need, the water to enter their mouths. However, mokum haroi lavo bo mayim bo inon. There, however, has to be the potential for water to reach all parts of the mouth without any interposition. So that if a person has no toothpicks or bone material stuck between their teeth, they don't have to open their mouths in the mikveh. But they have to be very sure before they immerse that they, we'll say, they flossed their teeth, or whatever other means of efficient dental hygiene is necessary to eliminate any interposition. And this idea of as long as the potential exists, you don't need to actualize it, is derived from Rebbe Zeira's teaching, Kid Rebbe Zeira. Rabbi Zeira's teaching is based on a topic involving a meal offering, a korban mincha brought in the Beis Hamikdash. The korban mincha has a maximum amount that can be brought in one vessel, because the korban mincha, on the one hand, was a flour, a meal offering, but it was brought along with oil, and the oil was mixed with the flour. There was a specific amount of oil, more than which one could not bring when bringing one mincha, and if there is too much dry material, when you knead the flour together, the oil wouldn't reach all of the flour grains. Do you need to actually knead the flour and oil together so perfectly that all the flour comes into contact with the oil? The answer to that is no, you don't need to actually do it. However, if you have too much flour, so that if you were to actually knead it, parts would remain dry because of the imbalance in dry versus liquid that's there, the mikveh, the mincha would not be acceptable. So here you see the source of this concept of the potential must be there, and if the potential is present, it exists, you don't need to actualize it. The Omar Rabbi Zeira, kol haroi lebila, any mincha offering, any meal offering, that there is an acceptable ratio, that it's fit to be kneaded. Bila means mixed or kneaded, with the oil reaching all of the flour. If that is it's present in potential, ein bila makeves bo. You don't have to actually knead it that efficiently or that thoroughly. V'she'eino roi lebila. However, if you have a mincha that in potential would be such that the oil wouldn't reach all of the dry parts, then bila makeves bo, then the need for a thorough kneading exists, and since you wouldn't be able to do a thorough kneading, some parts would remain dry, it becomes an unacceptable meal offering. So with that having been said, we understand why the tongue, as far as the mikveh is concerned, can be viewed as an internal organ not needing the mikveh water to reach it, but that is making all on the assumption that there's no foreign substance clinging to one's tongue when one is immersing. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. You notice at the end of Omid Aleph we have a semicolon. That's to stop you from continuing in the reading, connecting that which we're going to learn now to that which we just said. The Gemara says, Ketanoi, the issue is a machlokas tanoim, but that's not a reference to Rabbi Zeira's rule, it's a reference to mutilation of the testicles. Is that considered external or not? This is a machlokas tanoim. The posuk cited is a posuk from blemishes in animals. Blemishes in animals will render them unfit as a sacrifice. And we're going to, here we're citing a pasuk that deals with the reproductive organs of an animal. And it says in the male, regarding the male reproductive organs of an animal, it says, Umoch v'kosus v'nosuk v'korus. The phrase that you see in brackets is inaccurate. It's not, it has to be revised. In the revised form, is kulon, we're skipping the brackets momentarily, kulon af bebeitzim divrei Rabbi Yehuda. All of these mutilations are relevant to the testicles as well. When we say as well, that's in addition to the gid, the penis. Let's now read the Gemara again with the bracketed section. The terms referred to in the pasuk, the four terms, kulon bebeitzim divrei Rabbi Yehuda. They are all relevant or affecting the testicles. The Gemara asks, "Bebeitzim velo begid?" Only the beitzim and not the gid. The gid is more obvious. It's literally external. It's obviously noticeable. So why would Rebbe Yehuda say bebeitzim? Ela kulon af bebeitzim, divrei Rebbe Yehuda. All four of these mutilations, forms of mutilation, affect the testicles as well. And we're not going to get into the detailed translation of these things. That is dealt with elsewhere in the Shas, in Maseches Bechoros, if I'm not mistaken, as quoted on the side. But do note that all of these different forms of mutilation affect the testicles as well, according to Rebbe Yehuda. And they are not called a mum tomun. It's not considered some type of internal blemish. Rebbe Lezer ben Yaakov Omer Kulan Begid. He says that all of these mutilations referred to by the verse affect only the gid. So according to Rebbe Lezer, the testicles are considered, the beitzim are considered internal. So if you then were to superimpose this on the issue of a slave going free, according to Rebbe Lezer, the slave would not go free if his beitzim were mutilated. Rebbe Yossi Omer, molch v'kosus, those two forms of mutilation, af bebeitzim, they affect the beitzim as well as the gid. Nosuk v'korus, begid in bebeitzim lo. Those two forms of mutilation affect only the gid and not the beitzim. There's more detail to this. You can see it in Rashi, also in Maseches Bechoros, but for our purposes, we're emphasizing what's necessary for the understanding of our sugya. And as the Gemara said at the top, Kitanoi, the issue of mutilated beitzim as being an external blemish, this is a machlokes tanoyim. The Mishnah. On the side, we have a nosei/mivneh heading, and it reads, Darkei kinyin bebehemos, the forms of kinyin, of acquisition, when acquiring an animal. We've used a double underline to highlight behemo gasa versus daka, large animals like cows, and daka, small animals like sheep and goats. In the course of the Gemara, Biru Shitas Rav, the Omer behemo gasa, nikdeis b'mishicha Rav, will say something that doesn't appear to have a precedent in the Mishnah. And he says that a behemoth gasa, a large animal, is acquired through mishicha, through the act of drawing, and that doesn't seem to appear in our Mishnah. And we're going to wonder where did Rav get that idea from. So now we read the Mishnah. Behemoth gasa niknes b'mesira. A large animal is acquired through mesira. That would be a case where the owner of the animal would hand over the reins of the animal, the rope around its neck, to the purchaser. Mesira, the giving over, handing over. Again, we emphasize the rope, the reins. We're not talking about handing the animal itself over, but handing over the afsar, or there are other possibilities, the hair on the back of the animal. If it has a long enough hair that you can hand that over, that would be an act of mesira. V'hadaka, small animals, behadbo, divrei Rebbe Meir v'Rebbe Eliezer, lifting it up, not meshicha, not drawing it. V'chachomim omrim behemadaka niknes b'meshicha, and the chomim say that the small type animal is acquired through drawing it. Dorash Rav be Kimchunya. Rav lectured in a place called Kimchunya. And what did he say? Behemo gasa niknes b'meshicha. Large animal is acquired through drawing the animal itself, where the animal would walk a certain amount, it would walk maybe its body length, and that would be its form of acquisition, clinching the deal. Ashkachinu Shmuel l'talmidei de Rav. Rav Shmuel was a contemporary leader of Rav, together with Rav. Shmuel met Rav's students. Omar lehu, Shmuel asked, Mi Omar Rav behemo gasa niknes b'meshicha? Did Rav say that a large animal is acquired through meshicha v'anan b'mesira tanan? We've learned in the Mishnah mesira as the method. For Rav nami b'mesira omar, and Rav often says mesira as the method of transacting a large animal. Hodar bei me'ahi? Did Rav change his mind? Did he have a reversal? So all of these lines, it's pointed out, Rashi points out, all of these lines are Shmuel's, let's say, wonderment concerning what Rav supposedly said. So the Gemara response says, "Hu di Omar ki haitano." Rav, in saying Behemo Gaso Niknes B'Meshicha, is basing himself on a Tanaic source. Desanya v'chachomim oimrim zu v'zu Niknes B'Meshicha. The large and small animals are acquired through Meshicha, and we underline Meshicha. We want you to focus on this. So Rav has this. This is an opinion that acknowledges Behema Gasa through Mashiach, and Rav would be based on that. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Zu Vazu Bahagbo. And Rabbi Shimon says, large and small animals through lifting them up. Well, lifting up a large animal, Maskifor, Rav Yosef Elomeato, Peel the Rabbi Shimon Bamait and Yiknet. According to Rabbi Shimon, who says a large animal requires Hagbo, how would you acquire a peel? A peel is an elephant. What method of acquisition would there be for something that you basically cannot lift up? Omar le Abaye, and you'll notice we have several approaches. You'll notice also a Roman numeral number 1 with a starred note. On the side of the Gemara, we indicate Hamispur lefi Rashi. The way we're numbering and presenting this sugya is according to Rashi. Ketkuvo l'sheila im shayach hagbo b'peel is lifting up hagbo, a method of acquisition that has any relevance to an elephant. So Roman numeral number 1 introduces responses. These are gishas rishonas. The first approach is einam mitzaynim hagbo mamish kikinyan lepil. They don't make any mention of an actual act of hagbo. Roman number 2, which appears on the top of the next omid of chafov ma'alif, Tana Gemara Mevi'ah Hatzol Agbo Mamish. The Gemara there will make a suggestion of how you can accomplish Hagbo, raising the elephant, and that being a means of acquisition. So the first approach, though, does not acknowledge Hagbo for elephant acquisition. Well, if that's the case, how would you acquire an elephant? What means of kinyan are available? Omar Le Abaye B'Chalipin, the Chalipin method. That's we call the handkerchief method, where the purchaser would offer the owner of the elephant a piece of cloth, a handkerchief, or some other item. It could be something of symbolic value even. The owner of the donkey, of the elephant, it would take that handkerchief, and in exchange, while for his taking of the handkerchief, you become the owner of the elephant. Inami, another method of kinyan, relevant or appropriate for an elephant, besocheres makomo. You, the purchaser, would rent the spot on which the elephant is standing. By doing so, you become the owner of the, it's called a kinyan chotzer, literally the acquisition through it entering your property. By renting the property underneath it, since it's located in your property, you thereby acquire it, the elephant, that is, in the property that you're renting, the spot underneath the elephant. Rabbi Zera Omar, Rabbi Zera says, it's another type of kinyan, mevi arba kalim. You would bring 4, let's say, large vessels, 4 large jugs, umanichon tachas raglov, and place them under the elephant's legs, under his feet. So the elephant, the 4 legs, the 4 feet of the elephant, would then be put inside your 4 vessels. The idea being that items placed in the purchaser's vessels are acquired by the purchaser. Kalev shel adam kinyan lo. His vessels acquire for him. The Gemara asks, Shamis mino, should we conclude from here a question that's hotly debated elsewhere? The vessels owned by a purchaser, when located in the domain of the seller, those vessels are capable of acquiring on behalf of the purchaser? And as I said, that's a topic that's hotly debated. Well, this would be then an assumed position that yes, it's effective. So the Gemara says, no, we're not going to conclude that. We're not going to conclude that Rabbi Zera is of the opinion that Caleb Shalokev, which is Mocher Kona. Here in the case of the elephant transaction, what are we dealing with? What are we talking about? Besimta, an alleyway. It's not the public thoroughfare, it's an alleyway. And since it's not a public thoroughfare, nor is it the private domain of the seller, these vessels that are owned by the purchaser of the elephant can acquire the elephant on his behalf. The elephant is in his vessels by virtue of the feet of the elephant being put into them. We continue at the top of Chof Vav Amud Aleph, Inami, another entirely different approach, which says Hagbah can be done with an elephant. Doesn't mean that you have to pick up the elephant. You have to cause it to rise a height of 3 handbreadths, 3 tfachim off the ground. And how do you do that? Bechavile zmoros. By setting down on the ground bundles of tree branches. The tree branches have a sufficient height to them, so that when the elephant would, let's say, walk upon, trample upon the tree branches, the elephant in effect is ascending to a height of 3 handbreadths above the ground. The minimum amount necessary to accomplish Hagbah. So Hagbah can be accomplished with an elephant. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.